What would you say you do here?
Have a good time all the time.
Who's got it better than us?
Nobody!
What in God's holy name are you blathering about?
Well, I'll tell you what I'm blathering about. I've got information, man.
I want you to be realistic.
What do you love about music?
Being realistic.
As the story grows.
Chip the glasses, crack the plates. That's what Bilbo Baggins hates. That's what Bilbo Baggins hates. So carefully, carefully with the plates. Blunt the knives and bend the forks. Smash the bottles, burn the corks. That's what Bilbo Baggins hates. So carefully, carefully with the plates.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for joining us for the next chapter of As the Story Grows. My name is Trav, and as always, is my cousin and my cohort, Steven. Steven, say hi to everybody.
Hello.
And and with us today, we're being joined for the first time on As the Story Grows, but rejoined in the podcast as a whole by Mr. Andrew Elsner of the band Torch. Andrew, what the heck is going on, man?
What is up, you guys?
How are you?
I'm a little tired, but otherwise in good health, I guess.
2:52 p.m. and Andrew is fresh out of bed, ready to go?
Exactly.
That's awesome.
Yeah, hard. It's a hard life.
Long night, huh?
That's all right. Yeah.
Yeah, no problem.
Yeah.
That's okay. We're not here to judge. We're here to talk about it. That's all. No problem.
Yeah, I don't really have anything exciting to say other than I was out late and
no worries, man.
One too many beers.
What's your drink of choice when you're out there? What do you got belly up to the bar for?
Usually the regular just beer is a Guinness.
Okay.
Otherwise, nine times out of ten, I would say it's Guinness. And if not, some other similar stout, or just beer in general.
Guinness,
is that the extra stout or the
just the regular, like
the creamy, velvety drought?
Because number one, I think it's delicious. Number two, I guess I'm kind of vain. It's like there's the whole thing where everybody, for beer dorks, it's. Little factoid, everyone's like, oh, I can't do a Guinness. It's like having dinner. Well, that's it might feel that way, but it's actually super low calorie.
You took the words right out of my mouth.
Yeah,
it's
low calorie. Low in calories, yeah.
I used to justify it as a low-carb beer, kind of.
Yeah.
Sort of like in between light beer and regular beer.
Right. I mean,
you sound like 10 or 12 carbs,
Andrew. You sound like the overweight ladies from the late 80s that were like, the Snackwell cookies are low fat, so I can eat like 50 of these now, right?
Oh, totally. Yeah, I mean, the point isn't to have 19 of them, but like,
right.
I had a friend in St. Louis who was, getting older, and he was like, man, this fucking beer gut just sneaks up on you, dude. What does it, not into like raging alcoholic ways, but beer nerds who go out and drink, a 12% triple IPA or something, yeah, and you're like, oh, dude, and they're so delicious, and I love them, but, like, you do that for a better part of a year, doing bottle shares, and geeking out, you know, the calories sneak up on you real fast, and so he changed to Guinness and red wine for a year. That was the only thing he did. Didn't increase exercise or change his diet in any other way, and lost, like, 25 pounds.
No kidding.
Yeah, just the lazy, the lazy man's way. It took him a month to, or a year to get there, but, you know, it's, hey, there's no effort put in except for if he was going to have a drink, it would either be red wine or Guinness.
Beer and red wine diet, I'm in.
Yeah, yeah,
that sounds, I need to drop a lot more than 25, so.
That sounds doable. Yeah. That sounds, I can do that. I can abide by that. My mine is my favorite is a whiskey and ginger ale, and it sneaks up on you. Like, there's no excuse that a 39-year-old should be drinking as many sodas as I do, because you know what I mean. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm throwing a half a can of ginger ale in each time. And by the end of a Saturday, I'm like, damn, I had two cans of soda I didn't need, you know. But it's pretty funny. All right, so let's get on track and stop talking about all of our alcohol. The reason why we're bringing you back at the time that we're bringing you back is because you are in betwixt two tours.
Yes.
You did some North America stuff, and then you're going to Europe in a little bit, right?
Yeah, we fly out on Thursday.
Whew, man, we got you just in time.
Mm-hmm.
So while you were home, I don't want to talk about the European tour because you didn't do it yet.
Right.
But I want to cover some stuff. We're going to talk about some other stuff before we get started, but I definitely want to talk about the main hub of this podcast is going to be you did an online tour diary.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God. Hilarious.
Oh, man, I'm glad somebody read it.
Yeah. Well, I did, and we're going to go through and hit a couple highlights on it.
Cool.
While you were home here in between the tours, you went home to St. Louis for a little while, right?
I did, yeah.
All right. So oh, there he goes.
Mm-hmm. I'm moving to the other room.
No, it's all good. This is this episode is brought to you by the Nutribullet.
Exactly. It's real life shit. that's my Nutribullet in the background.
Yeah, exactly. We knew what it was.
I'm not sponsored.
Yeah.
Not to be confused with a Nutra Ninja.
Yeah. This is actually the Magic Bullet. And if they wanted to send me a free one, I would certainly post Instagram videos of myself using it. It was in St. Louis for a week, and hung out with my family.
I have some questions.
Yeah.
Torch is based in Florida, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you're
originally from Florida.
Originally from Florida. Where are they now?
Well, I guess Steve is in San Francisco, and currently threatening to move somewhere else again. And then Rick is the last holdout in Miami.
Okay.
And John just moved up to Gainesville, Florida. So I guess technically the rhythm section is still in Florida. And
Where do you live?
I'm in Atlanta.
That's what I thought. Something tells me Steve's not driving to band practice in Florida everywhere.
No.
Explain the chemistry of Torch and how you're doing all this without a computer. Like, I don't understand.
We're not really doing. Where to begin? Like, we just get, like, mainly we get together before tours.
Mm-hmm.
Or if we know we're getting together. Like, it's going to be a little different because John moved his studio to Gainesville,
mm-hmm.
and so he's there now, and his new studio is killer, and we helped him move some stuff in, but I haven't seen it fully set up like it is now. It's pretty gnarly. It's a place that I think was called Black Bear, but now with his stuff in it, I don't know if they'll change the name or whatever, like they've, you know, tweaked it. It's super nice.
Okay.
Whereas it was already pretty nice before, now it's like, I think, even further dialed in. But so normally we would get together and either schedule time to write in, like, you know, slash jam, kind of just figure out some new ideas. Or if we're doing a tour, we get together either in Atlanta or Florida or whatever city. It's usually tours in the past have been based out of the Southeast. Mm-hmm. Like, we'll start and end in the Southeast. And so we'll get together, I don't know, 2 or 3 days beforehand and just bang it out, do like 9-hour rehearsal days.
Mm-hmm.
And Yeah, so yeah, it's not the same way with tilts, you know, when I can get those dudes to commit to anything. It's not a traditional, you know, you lose that sense of like, oh, Tuesday, Thursday, Sunday is when we practice, you know, like, but I think it definitely keeps us more focused when we do get together, like, because we're there to do that one thing. Like, you're in town, everybody lives in town, there's also the factor of sort of laziness, like, oh, we'll, you know, like, if you cancel a band practice or if you don't really do anything, it's not that big of a deal. Whereas if you make time and everybody flies to a city to do that thing, you know, that's all you're doing.
So Steve flies from San Francisco to somewhere on the East Coast for band practice, essentially. Wow.
And Rick will drive up from Miami. It's an 11-hour drive from Miami to Atlanta. But like I said, so it's like, well, if we have to be in Atlanta anyways, hey, show up 3 days early and we'll start practicing.
Sure.
Is there ever like a lull where you're like, man, we really need to brush up? Or are you guys just like always playing music that you can just step right back in and it's just as tight as mid-tour when we see you?
I don't think it's ever as tight as like mid-tour or even like later tour when things are just... because that's a different kind of tight where you're flowing through the set in a particular way, and the whole thing becomes one giant thing, you know, instead of like song by song. I think sometimes we, not to toot our own horn, I think sometimes we don't give ourselves enough credit. Like, we'll be a little bit terrified, like, oh my God, like there's been some fly-in shows where we just have not had time to get together at all, or it's been like 3 months, and no, we haven't played together at all, and we still manage to... we still do fine, you know, and everybody's like, man, we hadn't played this song or this song in ages, and I thought we kind of nailed it.
It's like falling off a bike, right?
Yeah, so it's like, I think a lot of it, it's strange, if I'm concentrating super hard, or I think any of us, like, we're like, oh, God, and kind of panicking, more likely to make a mistake, and if you just sort of, like, let your muscle memory do the work, it's like, dude, you know, like, we've played some of these songs. I mean, I wouldn't try to estimate how many times, but, you know, if you're doing them night after night, 30 days in a row at a stretch, you know, it comes back pretty quick.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
it doesn't take too long, but we're proud about doing it. So we're not going to show up. None of us enjoy showing up unrehearsed. It feels lazy and lame and sort of like unfair to anybody who's going to pay money to come see us. Like,
Cool.
And I imagine you guys are practicing like on your own in between a little bit.
Yeah, I always like rush up. Like, again, probably I don't know what anybody imagines we do. Like, I play at home. I'm playing a lot of acoustic guitar, but just sort of by myself. And then, before we get together to rehearse, I'll go over the songs for a few days, just sit down and just play them over and over.
Right.
What do we imagine you do? I figure you roll out of bed at 3 p.m. and you push all the women and the money out of the way, and you're like, I got to get on the airplane. I got to go.
Yeah.
No? Oh, that's not? Oh.
Oh, I mean, yeah, totally.
Sure. Okay.
I've been kind of a follower of Relapse Records. Like, I got into, like, Neurosis and Today's a Day and stuff like that, you know, kind of my era of Relapse was kind of more in the 90s, but I always kind of viewed them, I mean, they were originally from basically where I live here in Lancaster area of Pennsylvania.
Yeah.
And I always kind of viewed them as a very independent, just like a long-lasting independent label.
Yeah.
Am I misunderstanding? Like, are you guys... when your move to Relapse, was that an effort to financially be a better support? Like, I kind of always thought
we were
smaller.
We left Fulcom because we had to, because they shut down.
They shut down, right?
Yeah. So, I mean, the company's there, the label is not. So, like, the brand is still doing shoes and clothing and lifestyle goods.
Right.
but Relapse, I mean, we liked the label, and I don't mean to make light of their contribution, because it's been awesome. Like, they've been kicking serious ass. Like,
Yeah, you guys are like all over Yahoo.com.
It was crazy. Yeah, their push for the new record, it was like, Jesus, they were working so hard, yeah, man. And it wasn't, it's not just like, oh, they're throwing tons, you know, it costs money to buy the ads, which they did.
Yeah.
You know? Like, but, I mean, essentially we did too, because we have to pay all that back. But it was agreed to in the budget. And, but, I mean, on paper, Volcom is part, you know, for example, Volcom is part of a multi-billion-dollar company. You know, like, they're owned by the same people who own Gucci and shit. I mean, it's huge. So, like, if they wanted to, they would have infinitely, or almost seemingly infinitely deep pockets. Right? Did I word that correctly?
Yeah.
but, you know, that's, you know, just, it's never going to work like that. But, you know, whereas Relapse, you know, we're working with the same budgets, more or less, but because they've been, you know, everybody at Volcom, we were treated like gold as well. They worked their asses off too, you know, like, they kicked ass. But I think for a band like us and the scene we're in, I mean, just volume, Relapse has dealt with more of the stuff we're doing, you know? I mean, sure, Volcom doesn't put out that many bands, so it's like, the level of connection and the sort of all the strings that Relapse has to pull at their disposal is pretty gnarly. It's been awesome. Yeah. And that wasn't, and I guess to your question, it wasn't like, oh, like money or connections. It was like down to what labels are even willing to talk to us. You know, there's a few that were on the list, not before Relapse or in, or any labels we would have preferred otherwise, but labels that, you know, were like, hey, let's see what shakes out. And I would say at least half, if not more, the labels we contacted didn't even return an email. So it's like, you don't get
to
know.
That's interesting. I would have thought after for Monocraft, there would have been an opening to go onto something like, I don't even know if these record labels even exist anymore, but like something like, you know, Columbia or Atlantic or something big, you know.
Warner Brothers.
Warner Brothers
is still around. Yeah, we would never do that. And at this
point, I wasn't sure if that was.
At this point, it has nothing to do with like scene cred or being independent. It's just the offers they give you, just by nature of those companies, are just straight up garbage. I mean, if they were bad before, now like the common thing is called a 360 deal, which is like code for basically it is a ferocious cut, like whatever they take.
It's of everything.
Not just, it's your. So like if you have management who's getting 15% of gross, which means everything before expenses, you know, like that means you have a label that's doing the exact same thing for work they're not really doing, in my opinion. Like their argument would be, well, we're the ones who are going to invest $500,000 in your record, killer video. So to get paid back, we have to do all these things. I mean, you just can't make that kind of money anymore, at least not yet, not until somebody finds a new way. It just has, sort of dinosaur age is done. And
not only that, but I mean, for a 360 deal, forgive my ignorant looking up at the industry perspective, but they make money off 360 degrees, which is everything.
Right.
Like, they actually have something to say at that point when it's like, hey, Coco Puffs offered Torch $500,000. You're doing a cereal commercial, and you don't really have much of a choice because money drives that deal. You know
Yeah. I mean, and it's you know, I'm sure there. I mean, fuck. I don't know what label like Queens of the Stone Age is on. You know, like, but at a certain. I mean, you'd have to be such a huge. And they didn't start out that way. You know, and we are nowhere near that. You know, maybe Queens near their first album popularity, but like, you'd have to be such a huge band to walk in there with a big, hot shot fucking lawyer to beat the hell out of the contract and be like, no, not doing this, we're not doing this, we're not doing that. You know, you sort of set your own terms if the money, you know, money talks. So it's like, if somebody wants you that bad, you can go in there and make demands and sort of call the shots to a certain degree. But then at the end of the day, you know, I mean, Queens doesn't have to do a Coco Puffs commercial, but you never know, man.
It's not a cool idea.
That was a wild How are the guys in Tilts doing?
You know, I spoke with Andy and Sean. I didn't get the chance to hang out with Ken. I know he's still doing, you know, he's got health issues.
Right.
But I know so far he's sort of like maintaining.
Good.
Yeah, it was, you know, like, I would be lying if I said I wasn't bummed we didn't get to jam at all, but it's, you know, those dudes are super busy. Everybody's got, it's different for me being the guy who rolls out of bed at 3 p.m. when those guys have full-time jobs and house payments and all that other stuff, you know, like, and other obligations.
He's got to say hi to him, that's good.
Yeah. We were going to go camping, and then our bass players, we were going to use his camper because we might, you know, it's going to rain, and then those plans got foiled because, as fate would have it, our bass player's wife, she's fine, but was rear-ended. The morning we were going to leave after dropping their kids off to school, and so her car got totaled.
And so he
was like, look, we're not going to be able to go. I can't leave her at home with no car for the entire weekend.
Right, I got to deal
with two children. Dude. And so it was like, well, okay. No hangout either.
Oh, bummer, man. That sucks.
Yeah. But, yeah, you know, there'll be future times.
Right. All right, so, yeah, I want to get started on this list. This list is hilarious. okay, so... I read through this list, and I wrote down some highlights and some questions. I'm not going to go through all of them because it's not a 4-hour podcast. We're not going to do like a part 3, part 4, part 5. But, dude, what I think lends to some of the best stories, I wrote down four things here. On March 18th in Grand Rapids, Michigan, you almost got in a fight with a 40-year-old woman over a Lord of the Rings pinball game.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. No,
you go ahead. I have, what the hell am I going to say?
It wasn't that, there's not a whole lot to it. It was just funny to me because the Pyramid Scheme, it's a killer place, always get treated super fucking well. It's the kind of place where you walk in and your buyouts for the night are in a, you know, labeled envelope next to your rider, which is next to a refrigerator full of all kinds of, like, you know, the finest victuals kind of thing. You're like, dude, like, we're treated so well here. Like, wow. And so they have a shitload of pinball machines in the front of the bar, and a lot of them are, like, super rare or, like, really new. And so, you know, went up there to play fucking pinball. And me being a big Lord of the Rings fan, I gravitated towards the Lord of the Rings pinball machine. I knew there was a tournament happening. So it was like a pinball tournament. And it was like different brackets. It was seriously, and it was a lot of older people who seemed like sort of shut-ins, you know, to be honest. Like,
they weren't listening to you guys.
Yeah, a lot of sweatpants, you know, like, and like, yeah, so this is like the front of the bar, like out, like there's like the venue hat. So the bar is divided in half. There's the venue side and then the bar side with the pinball machines and shit. They were just there for the early pinball tournament, and then we're still hanging out. And I guess I didn't realize, you know, the sort of probably by that time it was some heated competition between the winners of the earlier brackets, and so nobody was standing next to it, and so I walked up to put a quarter in, and yeah, it's not that exciting of a story now. But she was like, she like puts her hand out, she goes, no, we're waiting to play this, no.
Okay.
And I was like, oh my god,
this is the most exciting thing all week for her.
She was, and I think, and I'm like, well, I'm curious now. I want to know like how. They were breaking down the competition. I'm like, are you okay? I have no idea. So they're Byzantine pinball tournament rules. Like, I have no idea, you know. But like,
pinball tournament rules. Sure. Like, they weren't posted on the wall next to this no sweatpants.
Yeah, like the regulations.
I'd be looking around. Is Christopher Guest around filming something right now? Like, what's going on?
Yeah,
here?
She was like, no, we're waiting to play this. And so I'm like, okay, sorry. Like, and wasn't like, you know, like the kind of social awkwardness that comes from being a shut-in. You know, I mean, I know the deal, like, where the, you can't just be like, hey, sorry, yeah, we're, hey, you mind, like, me, or in most folks, be like, hey, dude, oh, I'm sorry, something friendly, like, hey, sorry, sure, we're waiting to play this, actually, this is part of the tournament. Dude, I was like, and I would have been like, oh, absolutely, you know, he's winning, or something.
Well, like pool tables, you jam your quarters underneath the bumper, and you're supposed to check. You know, you look along the pool table and you see 14 quarters. Dude, don't go anywhere near that table. It's 10 5 hours, you know?
Right. I felt like a kid who'd like stumbled into some game rules I didn't understand. Right. I'm like, sorry. And I walked away to another one. I'm like, well, Jesus, like, which ones can I play?
Right.
And so then I was all terrified. No, that I ended up playing. But yeah, I'm looking over my shoulder. I'm like, none of y'all are even playing this goddamn game. Like, I'm not that good. Like, right. I just want to see what happens when I hit the Balrog with the fucking pinball, dude.
The best part of that story was that you had just come from Middle Earth, and you were saying, I should whip out my phone photos and show her where I was just at.
Yeah, right. Oh, well, we were in New Zealand, yeah.
Would you just take a field trip for the day, and you went and posed in front of the hobbit hole?
Oh, dude, awesome. I don't know if he's like, well, so... I posted.
It was the film stuff, right?
Yeah, it was the day I broke the internet, or the day I broke Instagram. I posted. So when we were in New Zealand in November,
by the way, of that.
Yeah, we spent. we only did one show in Auckland, but we were there for I think 5 days, 4 or 5 days, and the last day. I mean, from the moment I knew we were going, I was online looking at Lord of the Rings, like the Hobbiton village tours, or those like the movie tours.
Right.
It's because there's a lot of stuff there's a lot of stuff that's still up, or you can go down to the South Island and go to like the Weta Workshop or like the big movie studio or whatever down there.
Wow.
But just south of Auckland in Matamata is the Hobbiton movie set, and it's the actual set from the actual movies. And I have to catch myself because I will talk about it for 5 hours. But
that's so cool.
It's insane. It's one of the cool. I mean, I realize it's just like a big playground, but the attention to detail is unreal. It's like nothing I've ever seen in my life. And
picture of Bilbo's house. You were standing in front of Bilbo's.
Yeah.
Now that's the place from the movie.
Yeah.
Then I know they built that specifically for the film set and then left it everything set up and everything.
Well, they go ahead.
Correct me. Am I wrong about that?
Well, no, you're right. But what's wild, like, so the Hobbiton movie set. Okay. I'll break it down real fast. They scouted a location. So they tell you the whole story when you do the tour. They originally are scouting a location. They wanted rolling green hills, a pond, and a giant real tree. Like these elements for the Hobbiton village. And then we'll build in it. Cool. So they find this, you know, 18,000 acre sheep farm with a family. I can't remember their name now. Who has lived on there for a while, and they're sheep farmers. And they talk to them, like, hey, for the original Lord of the Rings movies, like, we're going to build this thing. We want to rent this land from you. This location is ideal. What do you think? And they were like, sure. Paid him the money, built the set, and built it, you know, out of, like, normal movie set stuff, which I guess is light wood and sort of styrofoam and plastics and stuff. Mm-hmm. And when the movies were all done, the agreement by contract was to return everything as they found it. You know, so they had to like resod the hills, tear everything down.
And oh, I think wow!
On like the second or third, or the like, almost at the end of them tearing down the first set from the original movies, a huge storm came in, rained really hard. So there were a couple of the like structures, just the basic like trapezoid sort of plank, like cut into a hillside, like a, you know, like a little 8 foot thing that were left there, you know. Mm-hmm. So nerds like me found the location, would go to New Zealand because they wanted to see where the movies were filmed. They scouted out that farm, found out where it was, and would go there and take pictures and post them online. So then that sort of blew up, and then people locally were like giving little little minivan tours, you know, it was like four people with a car, and you could call them and they would drive you to the little site, like, and it was just a couple of super vague structures and then just the pond and the tree and stuff, right? So, and it would just be people standing around going, like, oh, and over here is where the green dragon would have been, and here's where this would have been. And imagine you're the people who own the farm, you're like, dude, and they were super nice. Like, we've got all these people traveling from all over the goddamn world just to come see where the movie was filmed, like these hills.
Sure.
And there's this pond. So when they came back to them for the Hobbit movie, the three Hobbit movies, they needed to rebuild Hobbiton Village. And so the family was like, okay, we've you know, sort of got you by the balls at this point. Like, if you build it, you know, you need to build it as a permanent structure.
Leave it up.
Yeah, leave it here, and like
that was smart.
We're going to operate. I mean, dude, they're like they get it's something like 75,000 or 80,000 visitors a year to that site. And so,
yeah, I was gonna say, start cashing in on it.
Yeah, like it's like $50 a pop for a ticket, dude.
Oh my gosh.
You know, like. So they won the lottery with that shit, and like
close down the sheep business.
Oh man! And so they have a team of a huge staff of people that maintains it every single day. I mean, there's people who are paid to walk, quote unquote, hobbit footpaths in their bare feet, so it looks as if barefoot.
Get out! Reach,
swear to God, it's
that's
like,
amazing.
That is crazy.
It's nuts. I mean, the green dragon is there. I mean, we were there for 2 hours. I took 600 pictures. And it was a ridiculously beautiful day. It was like 72 degrees, puffy white clouds.
So 15 years ago, there was this dude in overalls with a straw hat, like, yes, I'm a simple, modest sheep farmer. And now he's got like bling and cigars, and he's like, yeah, I'm totally pimping this area out. Millions.
Yeah, and I will say, it's not like, you might imagine it's sort of like overdone and sort of tacky. I mean, I don't think so. You know, there's the sort of home base on the other side of the highway, and you get into a bus, and it's just like a little cafe and a tiny gift store, and then where you can buy like a Gandalf hat for $800 or something.
Which
seriously, it's what did I buy? But
quit playing. How many did you buy?
So, and then you get in the bus, and then they take you across to the Hobbiton Village, and they walk you around. I mean. Yeah, like I said, it's immaculate. Steve Brooks and I went because we just wanted to get out of the city. It was the last day we could have done anything before we flew to Australia. Our promoter friend in New Zealand let us borrow her car, and so I drove us down there, and so you know, a nice 2-hour drive
That's
in New
rad.
Zealand, and then Steve. Why I brought him up is because he's really not a fan of the movies. I don't think he hates them or anything, but he just didn't like it. He didn't really care. He just wanted to get out of town. But even when he was there, he's like, dude, this place is beautiful. Like, I'm so glad I did this. This is insane.
Yeah.
Like,
it'll be cool to tell everybody later. Yeah.
It's nuts. And then at the end, you go to the Green Dragon, which is the actual Green Dragon from the movie. And it's all the, I mean, like I said, the attention to detail, like, oh, none of this is, all the huge wood beams are real. They all had to be hand cut. They had to be cut at weird angles because, you know, hobbits don't cut with heavy machinery, so it's not going to be super straight. Okay. I mean, a level of nerdery that's just sort of impossible. And then they give you free beer at the end. So it's like,
whoa, that's rad.
Sitting at a fireplace, you know, drinking stout
and what this
fucking green dragon.
And what this boils down to is you could have told this entire story.
Exactly.
Like, to that lady in the sweatpants, and she'd have been like, I don't give a shit, it's my game.
Yeah, like, you don't know who you're messing with.
That's amazing.
That's great.
You don't know the things I've seen.
That's awesome.
Oh, it was cool. I would go back in a heartbeat, man. It was awesome.
That's on my bucket list.
Oh, dude, I can't recommend it enough. I mean, it seems like, oh, you're going to go see a movie set? I mean, it would be, if I had all the time in the world, I would do the whole thing. I would start. It gets expensive. New Zealand is very expensive.
Sure.
We would start in Auckland and then work your way south. There's a whole list, you know, of course. There's now, like, just because it's a nerd movie, you know, so, like, the level of nerdery and attention to detail, people, you know, wanting to go down there and see all the things. Like, oh, actually, did you know that this is the where, you know, where Frodo said, I think we should get off the road. This is the path, and here's the tree they duck behind, and here's all the...
Cool. Yeah, yeah, cool.
So depending on how deep down the rabbit hole you want to go, like, it's pretty limitless.
Yeah. That is so cool, man.
How deep down the Hobbit...
The shit.
How deep down the Hobbit exactly. hole you want to go. Come on, man.
I see what you're doing there, man.
It sounds okay. like a beautiful day where you're at. I hear the birds chirping.
And yeah, listen to those birds. Yeah.
Very good ambiance.
Atlanta, Georgia.
Yeah.
All right, next. Turn the page. Next night, 24 hours later, after the sweatpants you almost got beat up incident, you're talking to this guitar guy who builds his own equipment, and you wrote in there that you had hilarious CC DeVille stories.
Dude, so this dude.
Can we have one
CC well, DeVille story?
Like, it was the House of Horrors.
Yeah, I forgot to get some East Coast accent.
Nice.
Well, so this dude, I can't remember the name. I'm sure it's written down in there, but he was a really sweet guy. A little, like,
I'm looking it up right now. Go ahead.
I don't imagine him listening to this, but it's just sort of a different dude. You know, like super friendly, super legit, and some of his guitars, like, taste-wise, were a little odd, you know, like body shapes. I'm like, this is different, you know, like, not really my thing, you know, but I can tell they're made well, and he was, you know, a little salesman-y. If I didn't know any better, he almost seemed a little lonely. So, like, but he was like, the friendliest guy, and he's in this guitar shop by himself in fucking Toledo. Who wouldn't be lonely in Toledo?
yeah,
it's just the worst. God damn, like somehow I found a city I hate more than Detroit.
Hang on, anyway. I'm looking them up. Toledo, Ohio, at Frankie's cozy venue, fun show, bar named A Shot After Us, the Torch Bomb. it's good, but it's not dissimilar to Kool-Aid.
Yes.
Sugar Crash and everything.
Yes.
Guitar shop like next shit. Door, Alvarado Guitars.
Alvarado, yeah.
There you go.
Yeah, like some really killer instruments. So, fast forward, really sweet guy. He talked to us for a while, you know, so he's telling me, he was like, yeah, like I guess this was still, because CC DeVille was eventually replaced by Richie Kotzen, before you hair metal nerd.
I knew that.
And so, but I guess this was before, like, Poison was still doing shit. I guess during, like, the Unskinny Bop days, you know, it's like they were still a big band, but they were not, I think they had lost the fire of, like, they're nothing but a good time days. Like, every rose has its thorn power. Right. But still a big band that could,
are you in a pet store?
There's a dog. I'm literally my front yard across the street is a dog park.
Like, now we're hearing the dogs, we're hearing the birds. I'm waiting for like a fish tank.
But
that's so funny. No, go ahead.
I'm so scatterbrained right now.
No, it's cool, man.
So he's talking about how somehow CC DeVille saw his guitars, or he was a fan, or it doesn't really matter. Somehow CC DeVille finds out about these guitars. And this one particular one that he really wanted, he's like, yeah. And they're hand-built guitars, and they're like $5,000. And so CC DeVille is like, yeah, man, like, here, you know, let me get, you know, your card. Like, I really love this one here. This is awesome. Like, we'll be in touch. I want it for this upcoming tour. And he's like, okay. And so he starts working on the guitar, or like there was just some miscommunication, and it was basically him trying to get a hold of CC DeVille, and he uses the email, and he starts getting emails from his management, who's like, or his lawyer, yeah, And he's like, yeah, I'm Cecilville's lawyer. Like, who are you? And he's like, oh, I'm in communication with Mr. DeVille. I was building a guitar for his request, and I'm trying to figure out, I need to know some details, dude. Like, does he have a favorite tone wood? Does he fucking, you know, what size fret wire does he prefer? Like, we talked about this, and it's all, I'm ready to go, and he seems super stoked, and I want to fucking follow up on this. And he's like, I don't know, no. He's like, I'll get back to you. But you need to, don't contact him. You need to contact, all contact has to be through me. And he's like, okay, well, you know, you just need to fucking reply to my emails. And so a bunch of time goes by, and basically he's just getting the runaround. Like, it's just weird. Like, yeah. I don't know how much of the story was true, but also, like, it doesn't seem totally unlikely. CeCe DeVille's lawyer, like, oh, okay, well, he calls him back finally. He's like, here's the deal. Just building one of those guitars, I guess the one he liked, and he's not here are the stipulations. One, he wants two of the guitars made. So he's gonna have to have two. One for touring, one for home or whatever. And he doesn't pay for them. And you aren't allowed to, what was it? They wanted to tie his hands in some way. Like, you're not allowed to say, like, CeCe DeVille uses my guitars.
What a rip.
Some shit.
Like,
yeah, so he's like, so I can't even, he's like, and then at some point they talked about maybe, like, sponsoring. I mean, I feel like they were really jerking him around. They were like, they mentioned that they could work out a deal where he could have his brand name on the side of their tour bus, like, amongst other ads, like NASCAR style or something. And he's like, so even then, he's like, I'm still considering, like, well, you know, maybe, you know, this, but he's like, I'm not going to build two fucking guitars for this dude. And then, nobody knows, like, I lose.
Yeah, that's
any
like
advantage.
The worst, like, deal, like, ever.
Yeah, like, why would I do this? Like, that's fucking ridiculous.
If a guy broke into his guitar shop and stole two of his guitars, it'd be basically the same outcome for him.
Exactly.
Like, nobody knows who it is.
Yeah. He's like, I'm just giving you these, man. Like,
I'm taking these. Turns around and walks back out. That's the same.
Right. I mean, really, it would just be like through the grid, because it's, you know, and if I had to guess, it's probably because either through Ibanez or Fender or Jackson or whoever he was currently endorsing, probably some exclusive deal where, like, you can't be seen with other shit, you can't mention other things,
yeah,
you can't be associated with other shit. It's totally ridiculous. But yeah, just the weirdest thing, I guess, to walk into some dude like, oh yeah, I was gonna build this guitar for CeCe DeVille. Like, what? Really?
Like, was he trying to get you guys to buy it?
I mean, we like buy from him, but no, he wasn't. I mean, he wasn't too. He had some clever little tricks. What was it? One, he had some little toys. It's sort of like the heir of an inventor, you know, that kind of dude, like a little wily.
Yeah.
He was like, oh, what you need is the brass ass. It's this big, I invented it. It's my proprietary, thing here.
Ass.
And it's basically just a heavy chunk of brass that, like, so, like, on the back of a, like, my Tele, for instance, like, you string it through the back, through the little eyelets, like it's strung through the body. Instead of having individual eyelets, you have a routed big chunk of, like, rounded at the edge, you know, heavy brass that's, like, routed and set in, like, flush with the body, and then the holes are obviously sort of riveted out as well, like, to have a nice smooth angle. But it's he's like, oh, dude, and which makes sense, like, the physics of guitar making, you know, you have this nice heavy mass, he's like, oh, it's insane, like, it'll, if you put the, you know, you have some guitar that you love, it plays well, but the sustain is garbage.
Yeah,
you need the brass ass.
And at any point did this guy ever, like, get into, like, Guitar Center lectures? Like, we were doing good business in the 90s, and then the Guitar Centers moved in and took a stand.
Not really.
Like, any of that kind of stuff.
Not really. He's like his shop. I mean, he had old super old, like 1920s, 1930s, like vintage radios in there,
A
few other like odds and ends. So, like I said, like sort of like a fix-it man slash guitar builder slash guy who runs into CC to build.
That's cool.
Yeah. When you described him as lonely, that's what I was picturing. Just like this guy who was a little like
a curmudgeon
by the corporate
right. Or
something.
yeah, kind of. Yeah, I mean, like super friendly, but yeah, just like it for that shop in Toledo. It seemed like he'd been there a while. It was tiny.
Yeah.
A little grungy, but he had some cool guitars.
Okay. The next one that I wanted to hit on, March 22nd, in Montreal, you mentioned that, oh my God.
I'm not flushing a toilet.
Sounds like
just being in the sink?
No, it's pretty loud.
Being in the sink. Sorry, dude.
It's not bothering us. It's just more funny.
No, who cares?
I'm making coffee. Go ahead.
Hey, if the listeners don't like it, we'll refund all their money. How's that?
Exactly.
Yeah.
In Montreal, at Bar Le Ritz, you said Canada is cold, and then you complain about cold a lot. And
yes.
Yeah, that sounded 7 degrees. Ugh, that's.
Yeah, oh, yeah, yeah. It's horrible.
But you got to, you said something. The cool twist of the evening was staying with Sandy at one of the one and only Sandy's Rock Inn. It's a sort of bed and breakfast specifically for bands, but it kind of leans towards somebody that you have to know to book it.
Yeah.
What the heck is that? Now, you put that on the internet, so I'm not uncovering anything.
Well, no. Yeah, it's like because she posts, like, I guess it wouldn't be like regular folks, to put it that way, like people not, like it's for traveling musicians, and I think mainly traveling musicians that she either sort of knows or that other bands have put her in touch with.
Okay.
So like Nate from Converge put us in touch with her, and he's like, oh dude, wow. You're going to Montreal, you have to stay with Sandy. She is the shit. It's basically an apartment that she owns. You're a 2-bedroom apartment, but there's plenty of beds and there's plenty of couch space, and it's just like a well-kept, very homey place. So it's sort of like on the angle of like when you're on the road, either crashing on floors or dirty hotels.
Oh, yeah. Right.
Here you can, you know, come over before the show, chill, take a shower, do laundry, watch some TV, put a record on, you know, read a book.
That's rad.
She's going to make dinner. She's going to make fucking real food in the morning for breakfast. You can chill, have
That's
coffee.
Great.
And so it's just like you sort of like build, you know, the angle is like the comforts of home kind of thing for bands who are road weary, you know.
That's a really cool angle because I know a lot of bands. I never really toured much, but I did spend, you know, nights on couches and stuff, and I know a lot of bigger bands that are like out there a lot night after night after night constantly talk about how like it's so nice that people put us up on a Tuesday night, and then different people put us up on a Wednesday night.
Yeah.
Different people, but when we get to their house, they want to hang out. They want to be like, "Oh my God, I have this band in my house. Let's stay up and watch the Big Lebowski." But and you're like, "I just want to go to bed."
Leave me alone. Oh, totally, totally,
you know?
Man.
And
totally.
You don't want to be rude, but at the same time, I can't tour on 2 hours of sleep. I'm going to die. You know?
Oh yeah, I mean, it's either that or even if you're not crashing at houses, it's still friends coming to shows, and you're getting. I mean, it's a blessing and a curse. It's like I'm lucky to know all the people I know, have all the friends that I do, but then you're out for 30 days, and in every city, you have another dozen people sending you texts going like, I can't, all caps, like, I cannot fucking wait to hang out with you, dude. And you're like, oh, man, I can't. And then they're like, we're going to do so many shots. You're like, fuck. I can't, you know.
Oh man.
Oh no.
And then you get food poisoning and then we're like, hey man, we want to meet you. What's going on?
perfect segue. The next bullet point I had was March 27th in Philadelphia, where I was like,
I had a feeling that was on your list.
Friend.
Oh dude, yeah.
I had to bring it up.
Well, what's crazy is that John, I it was too far apart for it to be related. I'm pretty convinced, but John got really sick at the beginning of the tour. He was laid out for like a good 3 days at least, where he was just trying to get through the night up on stage, but was like barely there, like wasn't moving, was just pasty white and feverish, and would go immediately lay down after the show, And, you know, we'll be up on stage and people are like, where's John? Well, can you get John for me? I want to talk to him. Like, dude, he's actually super sick. And they're like, well, I'll buy you a beer if you just go grab him real quick. The dude has a fever and he's laying down. Yeah. Wow. And so, like, he was in bad shape. And then I guess it was like 3 weeks later, I end up getting sick. And it came on so fast is what makes, you know, I mean, I had like stomach bugs, and there's, you know, Steve and I debate over what is stomach flu versus food poisoning, you know, and is there really a difference physically? But yes, I ended up getting super sick, and it was right before that show in Philly, right?
Yes, Philadelphia.
Yeah, yeah, it was like such a killer venue. Like, once it filled out, we were like, dude, and the sound for us, at least on stage, was probably the best of the tour. It was just
That's so awesome to hear.
It sounded pretty good sounding. From where I was standing.
huge sounding, man. It was insane. Yeah, it was and fun. So, like, I was already just kind of, you know, it's like when something nasty is, like, sneaking up on you, and I'm like, man, I just feel kind of tired. Something's going on. I have a coffee, you know, like kombucha back there. I'm like, oh, I made one of these, and I'm just sitting there. Nice. And then, but maybe like 30 minutes before we're about to play, I'm like, man, I just have like sour stomach. Like, I've just been drinking too much this tour, you know. So I take like an antacid, and then that's not really doing anything. I'm like, man, I feel like garbage. Like, I feel really shitty. I just can't tell what's happening. I do, you know, everything just like malaise, where I'm like, I feel like sleepy. Like, if I lay down, I'm gonna fall asleep right now. Like, something's going on. And then, like, 10 minutes before we get on stage, I'm like, dude, what the fuck? And then we're on stage. Once I start moving around, I'm like, okay, dude, I'm fucking sick. I'm gonna throw up. And so the whole time, I'm like, I wish I had a video of that night, because I'm like making faces, like, my stomach is like in knots, and then I'm like, oh, and then that would go away for a second, and then I'm like, oh, dude, I'm going to shit myself. Like, oh, my God. 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 Like, something's wrong. And so we're, like, halfway through the set, and I'm like, what do I do? You know, do I just puke off the side of the stage? Like maybe I could just find a moment in a song where I'm not really doing much, and I can sort of drop out and come back in when I can, and I'll explain myself later. But I held out. Even did a shot. The singer for Nothing brought out shots of Jameson.
I saw that.
I saw that.
Did a shot of Jameson. I was like, dude, I'm gonna die.
It had occurred to me after thinking about the fact that you were sick, and I was like, oh, I remember you drank that shot. I was like, I wonder if that was all just like a performance, like swallow, focus.
Oh, dude, yeah, it was insane. Yeah, worst things have happened to people, but I'm like, dude, I was in such bad shape. I was like, well, fuck it, I don't know, maybe this will help. Like, I'm keeping it together. Yeah, and especially towards the end of the set, I'm like, okay, like, two more songs. And so we stopped the first main chunk of the set before the two encore songs, two or three, whatever we did. I ran to the backstage. There was huge. It was just immediately right behind that curtain behind the stage. And so I caught John for a second. I'm like, dude, you guys got to give me a second. I'm going to throw up. And he's like, oh, shit. Run to the bathroom and just heave my guts out.
Oh.
And I'm like,
so you threw up on that encore.
Dude, I puked my guts out in the bathroom.
Oh, my gosh.
And then, you know, like, sort of rinse my mouth out. I'm like, oh, my God, get back up on stage. We do the encore. And then I'm like, cool, turn all my shit off. And I go back in the bathroom and I just shitting everywhere and puking everywhere, and in the bathroom, you know, and so it was awful. And the rest of the night, you know, it's that horrible. What's like once every 4 years or so for me, you know, like it sneaks up or you eat something.
I know exactly. Yes, dude. Steve, you can skip this part. We don't need to keep this in. But, dude, I went down to Clearwater to watch the Phillies. Did some spring training.
Yeah.
March 14th through the 20th. Right.
Yeah.
So, like, while you guys were on tour, and right in between when John got sick and when you got sick, because I came home and basically, like, the next week went to see you guys.
Yeah.
I got it. And,
Me
and my neighbor, my buddy who lives up the street, his name's Scott. Me and Scott were just in a car. We went down to Florida, and we pulled into Savannah, Georgia, to a Days Inn, and I just got this, something's not right feeling. Within an hour and a half, dude, it was a total evac. It was like...
Yeah.
Everything, both ends, my body was like, everybody out, and there was no control. I vomited seven times that night. Dude, I haven't thrown up seven times in 10 years.
Oh yeah, no, it was me on the side of the road.
Oh,
dude. You know, like them having to stop because these dudes are like, I'm trying to just be, you know, you're on tour, like I'm not trying to be a hero, but I'm also like, I just wanted to go to the fucking hotel and lay down. These dudes are in Philly. They want to go get cheesesteaks, and so I'm like, you know, we limped over to CVS. I've got some activated charcoal, which I swear by.
And yeah, I saw that in the notes. I definitely want to hear about the activated
charcoal. Oh, it totally works. And and some Pepto and whatever else. And then yeah, stop the van on the way to for these guys to get sandwiches. I think it was at that point these guys realized, like, oh, because earlier it was just me in a bathroom by myself, and then on the side of the road, I'm just like, everything I'd eaten in the last 20 years all came up.
Exactly.
And then they were like, they were like, oh, Jesus, like, dude, like, are you okay, man? I'm like, no, man, that's what I'm trying to tell you. Like,
my buddy was making fun of me because he said, after you threw up like the second and third time, I could tell that your body was empty because you started making noises that a man isn't supposed to make because you start dry heaving and there's nothing to go, so you're just your head's in a toilet, so it's amplified, and you're going, and there's like nothing coming out.
Yeah.
He's laying in the other bed laughing at me, and I'm like, you suck. You're the worst person ever. And he's like, I'm sorry, you just sound hilarious.
Man, I would have been terrified that I was next. I'm surprised he was laughing.
Oh, totally, man.
That's what I told him.
You know.
Okay. Yeah, he never got sick. He never got sick. See, I went to my with my job, Andrew. I'm a pest control guy. I'm an exterminator. Mm-hmm. I went to I actually stopped in a patient first place, a medical place, and I explained all my symptoms to a lady that I know, and she was like, "Oh yeah, it's going around. There's like this lower GI bug. It's not food poisoning. There's a gastrointestinal thing going around that is making people violently sick, and by the time they get through the night and they come in here to talk to us, it's over. Like, it's
weird.
You spend 7, 8, 9 hours just destroying your body from both ends, and then after that, you're actually done. It just feels, you just feel like a wet wash rag for a day.
Yeah.
But there was like a lower GI thing. It sounds like John got it.
Interesting.
And I got it.
Yeah.
You got it. And
well, mine
around, you know.
My question was going to be, where did you eat that night? Because I mean, if it's in Philly, I got to watch out.
I'm telling you, dude. I would bet money it wasn't food. I bet you got touched by something two, three days earlier.
That was my guess too. I mean, because food poisoning to me, it's like, oh, I eat something really gnarly and I puke. And, you know,
exactly.
It's not like working its way through my system like a goddamn virus. You know?
Right.
Like,
yep. Sure. You could have got sick 3 days earlier, and it didn't manifest itself until 30 minutes before the Philly show. So
whatever. Totally, yeah.
See, this is the reality, children. Those of you listening, is when you're in a touring rock band, the show must go on.
There's nowhere to go.
May I quote Andrew Elsner?
Go for it.
I think I know the quote.
Andrew quotes, I'm a professional, I'll rise above it, from Nigel Tufnell from Spinal Tap.
That's right.
Nice.
I'm a professional, I'll rise above it.
Andrew says, anyone in a working band knows, it's like having multiple wives and husbands. Like any group of brothers and wives, you called them brother wives.
Yes.
You spend so much time in close quarters, eventually you kind of go crazy. Occasionally you find yourself having arguments like a sour old married couple, saying shit you don't mean, and instantly regret. Molehills become mountains of silly-ass bullshit. 24 nights in a row of 3 to 5 hours of sleep, hangovers, long drives, and an endless parade of brutally fucked bathrooms really sap your flowery feelings for your fellow man.
Yes.
Musicians are emotional people, I know, because I am one. The point is, accept it, be aware of the false feelings which exhaustion can create like a shitty mirage.
Yes.
How about, I'm gonna squeeze all that onto a t-shirt. That's good stuff.
Outstanding.
It astounds me. I mean, I couldn't have stood there on stage and performed like nothing was wrong. I mean, not guitar now.
Yeah, I got a noodle.
That's fine. Go ahead.
Go.
I mean, but that's the truth of it, right? I mean, you guys sold a bunch of tickets and showed up, and what do you do, right? I mean,
right. I mean, I'm not.
Do you ever have an out for something like that?
No, I mean, usually it's weird, man. I think, like, it takes something intense like that to really sort of knock you on your ass. I mean, because even John...
Yeah, right, right.
John wasn't throwing up, but he was... Man, he wasn't there. Like, he, for, like I said, for at least 72 hours, he would show up to the show, you know, like, ready to play, but couldn't... It was 2 weeks to load anything, and everybody, you know, it was kind of thing where friends of ours were like, what's up with John? Is he just bored or some shit? No, man. I'm amazed he made it on stage. Yeah, like he's incredibly.
What a rock star.
Yeah, he is incredibly sick right now. And I mean, it's weird. I guess, you know, you hear certainly Van Halen or Guns N' Roses or something. You know, like they'll get exhaustion or you know, somebody loses their voice and they'll cancel a tour. But
yeah,
you know, I don't know.
Well, I mean, hey,
you know, if Axl Rose had that daily flu, whatever it was, you know, he wouldn't have played. And a riot would have broken out, and somebody would have died.
Well, those of us in the real world that have jobs that we're accountable to people, they give us sick days.
Yeah.
They give us time off.
Right.
You know, if that would have happened on a Monday morning, I wouldn't have went to work. You know what I mean?
Right. I mean, what are they going to do? I mean, Torch plays a three-piece for a while. You know, like they could just do some songs, but they would be retarded. You know, it's not like, oh, dude, without Andrew, they're nothing. But it's right. Like, well, the new songs, like, there's, you know, you
there's become, a lot there, yeah.
Yeah, you become integral to the stuff that you're on, you know, like you're singing harmonies, you're playing leads, you're doing other stuff, and it, you know, apart from, like, filling out the sound, you know, like, we couldn't play without Rick, you know, like, what, you know, I shouldn't even say that, like, there's been
it would
times,
have been a bummer.
Yeah, yeah. There's been times when Rick didn't tour. I think once when Rick was getting surgery, our friend Eric from the singer guitar player from Wrong, who was on this last tour, he plays drums too. Yeah, I got you. But just my
what
point
a talented being, guy! That's crazy.
Super talented.
Yeah, Eric's awesome.
He can play because Rick's. I mean, the stuff Rick does is like really, really good. I mean, like so if you can step into those shoes and then turn around and then be just as awesome as a guitar singer guy. I mean, that's awesome. I mean, I was blown away by Wrong the other night. We saw them, and I mean, yeah, I understood the EP was sounded like Helmet. I get that, but
yeah,
like, dude, like it was like exactly what I wished Helmet was still doing. Like,
oh, totally, it's shamelessly.
Like, I guess
Helmet.
How they would have been.
Yeah, it's Helmet on purpose. Like, it's definitely like a study in
clearly,
those first, like those first two records, like Strap It On and Meantime. It's like that's the deal, you know, like early like AMRAP stuff. But I get.
But they kind of make it their own a little bit too, though. You know,
totally.
Like they got
totally. But yeah, the consensus being, I wish this is what Helmet was still doing.
Absolutely.
Awesome.
Yeah, there was like a thing happening where a lot of these sort of 20-somethings in bands were doing like they just wanted to sound like Nirvana, like in like today's age, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
so it was kind of interesting to be like let's move on to something different, like
yeah,
a little bit of a Helmet influence instead of Nirvana.
Yeah,
but
let's pull this back to reality now. Let's wrap it up and let you go
back to reality.
Steven, you wanted wanted me to write down something about Andrew cutting his grass. Go right ahead.
Well, I mean, the specific thing is like, what is life like when you're not constantly touring? I mean, you're mowing your lawn, you're drinking some blends.
Yes.
Like,
clearly, you live. It's obvious to me that you live in an animal sanctuary and you make smoothies every 4 minutes. We heard that on the
I mean, I understand you guys. You know, you want to play in bands and do this thing, but. Do you really? How much do you like your time off? I mean, do you like being home?
Oh, dude, I love it. Well, okay. Yeah, it's about
like, is there marriage and babies and stuff in the future? Anything like that?
You never know. I haven't written any of that stuff off, it definitely. There's okay, now I'm thinking of like five different topics, but like as far as being home, like if I'm home too long, then you start to get anxious, or I start to get anxious and sort of feel like I'm not doing anything in my life, because you know we're all, at least all the Torch guys, all pretty much in the same boat. when you get to the point where you have completely organized your life around a touring schedule, you can't really have a normal 9-to-5 yeah. schedule when you get home. So you end up having a lot of free time that you have to structure or have to be doing something. So, like, even though I'm not making a ton of money, I'll work the door at the bar, like at 529 in Atlanta, or Wednesday and Saturdays.
Yeah.
Just taking money and checking IDs, you know, or trying to do something, or, you know, like, I got to keep a running schedule. I want to do yard work. I want to be reading.
Yeah.
So, on top of playing music and writing as much as I can, but, like,
if you ever find yourself up in Pennsylvania and you want to do yard work, dude, text me.
All right, yeah,
you can cut my grass anytime you want.
one of the running themes with what Travis and I do with this podcast is, like, we're working musicians, but we're not like doing it on the level you guys are, but, you know, we're creating music and doing it at the level that we enjoy doing it with the family life, with the jobs and stuff. These are all things that choices we've made that we wanted to have, you know, but it was like the balance of how are you a hardworking, you know, father of however many kids, and then, you know, balance out art and creativity and inspiration and all that stuff. So it's always fascinating to hear from guys like you who are going from the other side. You based your whole life around, your schedule anyway, about touring full time. Some guys might be like, "Man, I'm getting sick of this touring life. I want to get married someday," you know.
Happens. Oh man, it happens all the time, and it just depends on the person. Yeah. I mean, I feel like drummers mostly.
Like, oh my gosh.
Shut up! Podcast over.
Travis is my drummer, and I can say that that's absolutely how it went.
you're fired. Podcast over.
Oh my gosh!
No. I mean it happens to everybody. I mean, it just depends, and it's not about like anybody ruining the band. It's just like you know, a lot of people. Like, oh, I'm a fucking lifer, dude. And it's not about, I mean, I wouldn't want to be a lifer just to prove it to someone. Like, I want to be doing it because I don't want to be doing anything else. I don't want to be touring 12 months out of the year, you know, like, because it's weird, man. Like, you do miss, I don't have the right word for it, but it's eventually, I think I was talking to my mom about it one time, but eventually you feel like really unsettled. It's sort of an untethered kind of feeling where it's like, I'm not really anywhere, you know, like, I mean, when I'm in Atlanta now, I've been here long enough, like, especially this house I'm in now, I feel like it's home, but you still don't have like a deep connection to things you felt like when you were young, you know, which is, which now I think am I giving a synopsis for the movie Garden State or something. I don't know. I don't have anything too profound to say on it, but it's, you know, it's still healthy to have like a work/life balance. I mean, if the opportunities were there, real opportunity and money wise, you know, for us to be gone really that long. I mean, bands that would be on a 4-month long tour. I mean, Steve is kind of doing that right now. He's going to be out for a total of almost 3 months by the time we get home from the Torch May tour overseas.
Wow.
You miss home. You miss your regular stuff. So here's what's weird. Like, even though you can't do it, there's a part of me that if I could, like a weird dream, I don't know, man. Like, if I could have come home from tour and work some weird, like, data entry job around people I don't know, like, I would come home, work it, like, from, like, 10 to 5 and go in there and just, like, some repetitive, like, mindless bullshit. It's like, just sort of, like, totally detach, because it's like you get so, I get the thing that what burns you out, or really what burns me out, is the sort of monotony of touring. It starts off really awesome, but then everybody, it's sort of like, especially in the States or even overseas, man, I have friends who are like, oh, dude, after like my 24th European tour, like, okay, I'm in Germany, but I'm playing this city and I'm looking around. I'm like, I could be in Columbus, Ohio right now. Like, I don't know. Like, it starts to lose. And it's a bummer. I mean, it's not because touring sucks. It's about you have to sort of maintain fresh attitudes and, like, stay positive, stay healthy, get enough sleep, don't drink too much, all those normal things to have a healthy mental attitude about the whole process, because it'll burn you out. Yeah. It'll burn you out in the worst way. And, like, and it seems, and you read about it, like, oh, big deal, you know, like, oh, how tough life, you know, like, and not that those jabs are wrong, because I think band, you know, touring musicians who do complain too much are also garbage. It's like, dude, it's hard, but, you know, toughen the fuck up, you know, right, like, this is the gig, you know, like.
I think the Melvins said it best, and I'm not going to be quoting them word for word, but it was Buzz that was talking, and he said, you know, the same sort of thing, like, people saying, oh, man, like, this touring life is so hard and chaotic, and, you know, we're losing people left and right. And he was saying, like, you know, keep it in perspective, you know, like, we travel, we play our music for a bunch of people, and we get paid for it.
Totally.
Like, totally. You know what I mean? Like, and totally. It is hard, though, and I know that there's, I mean, I had a brief stint of touring, but for me, it just felt so unhealthy, and I don't think it's certainly for everybody, and some people just are built stronger than others, and I that whole detachment from home and everything, I mean, I have younger brothers, and I mean, they talk about stuff about when they were graduating from high school and all this stuff, and I'm literally like, I don't remember any of this. I think I was gone for all that.
Yeah, oh, totally.
And I kind of regret some of that stuff, and so, you know, there is a balance, like, you know, it's like really a cool, fortunate sort of opportunity, but at the same time, it's, you got to really keep your mind in check.
And oh, dude, there's stumbling blocks that you aren't expecting and probably aren't prepared for, because you just don't think, you're like, huh? Like, big deal, you know, but you're traveling in a fucking space capsule full of fucking, full of band garbage, you know, and everybody's bullshit. And so, like, you know, it's little by little, you know, like, things start to eat away, and you have to be actively aware of it when it's happening. You have to actively maintain perspective. Like, you can't just be lazy about it. Otherwise, yeah, you end up having just stupid arguments. I mean, happens to us, you know, like, you know, you end up apologizing later for just dumb shit that could have easily been avoided. But, yeah, I don't know, man.
Molehills become mountains of silly-ass bullshit.
Exactly. Yeah, it's like, you just... I mean, I remember talking to... my friends in this band, The Kickback, together in Chicago now, like, but Billy, the singer and guitar player, is a friend of mine, and he and I, like, when we first met, like, hanging out, like, talking about touring, it's like, oh, dude, so you guys have been out for, like, 3 weeks. Like, you're at that point where, like, you're looking at each other quietly going, like, do you have to fucking, like, every time you sneeze, like, you do that weird fucking, what is your deal? Why do you fucking sneeze that way? Like, will you knock that shit off?
You, like, start to nitpick every little thing.
Oh, it's the worst.
Why, like, can't you chew without breathing through your nose? Like,
yeah. Oh, totally. Yeah, it's like, you really fucking have to do that.
Andrew, it sounds like, it kind of sounds like married life, to be honest with you. You know?
Oh, yeah. It's the thing. Well, there's the whole thing, you know, the other concept of familiarity breeds contempt. It's like, you're around
somebody so
much where it's like, I mean, and that goes for yourself too. You know, people see shit in you that you don't want to fucking face up to. It's just like, and so, but again, oh, it's
not,
like,
not,
hey,
not really. I'm pretty much perfect. I don't think I don't really do anything wrong.
Yeah, it's just like But I think, you know, the Torch dudes, we all have, like, we're pretty resilient. I think it's sort of like, you know, we've gotten some gnarly arguments and some fights, you know, but, like, it's never anything we can't get over within 24 hours, you know, like,
good. That's good.
And we can laugh about it later, you know, we can, like, laugh at ourselves, and it's like, and, you know, it's, I think it's that kind of thing that, I don't know, you have to be able to work through shit, man, like,
I mean, Rush did it, right, for, like, 40 years, it's gotta work somehow, right?
Yeah, there's ways, there's tons of bands, you know, like, there's, I can think of guys who I would love to start a band with, because it would be so much goddamn fun. But then, you know, probably the music wouldn't be that good, or, like, we wouldn't really... You know, you so there it is, a different angle, you have a different sort of form of balance, but
you kind of have to prioritize the health of each other, you know.
Yeah.
Like if you got one guy in the band that you know is kind of like going sort of taxi driver, and you're like, maybe we should slow down a little and make get this guy right. caught up with what's going on, and that's right. another thing. A lot of bands don't; they're just so wrapped up in that working and touring and stuff. They don't take care of each other, and then it's like, you know.
No, you're right. Yeah.
And when one guy goes, it's like now the floor just fell out from under.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, it is. You definitely have to maintain things as a unit, yeah. you know, like, and a lot of time, you know, sometimes, like, yeah, like I said, means for being proactive, and a lot of times it just means shutting the hell up and,
yeah,
like, finding, you know, you redefine what your personal space becomes, you know, and for me, it's like my headphones in and my face buried in my phone or a book, and it's like, you know, I mean, it's wild reading, like, tour, like, in that tour blog, I mentioned David Lee Roth, which I'm a huge fan. Like, but his book, Crazy from the Heat, he talks about that. He's like, oh, you have to be able to, like, separate. You know, you need to be able, you know, get some sleep in the daytime, take a big wool hat, and put, you know, specifics. It's like, get a tall, like, wool hat and pull it down over your eyes. Because in the daytime, like, you need to have certain amount of, you know, if you're following, like, the circadian rhythms, you know, like, you need to have this much darkness, this much light, you need to have balance, you have to have this, like, and it creates, like, a sort of illusion of, like, I'm alone, I have my own space, like, if you're a person, like, more, way, you know, I don't mind talking, and in certain instances, I don't feel introverted, but I'm 1,000,000% extreme introvert, like, where it's, like, I don't want to be, when I want to be alone, I don't want to, you know, Steve's the same way, where it's, like, dude, it's nothing personal. You need to get away from me.
Right.
Like, I need to be alone. I don't want to be talking to anyone. I don't want to be doing anything. And so that's the thing, which, to come back to the tour question, when you get home and, like, cut the grass, if I'm cutting the grass, I'll have my earphones in, and it's just, like, the most relaxing thing ever.
It is, right?
Yes. Yeah. It's therapeutic.
It's the shit. It's the shit. And so, like, it's just really plain, and it's super mundane, and I love it, and it's, like, it's like I can do this, and I'm gonna break out the weed whacker, and I can't wait to put new line in the weed whacker. Like,
I downloaded a couple summers ago. I downloaded.
Feels good to work hard in other ways sometimes.
Totally,
I downloaded Stuart Copeland's book. I'm a huge Police fan, and
totally.
I was like, I can't wait to do this. This came in seven. It's seven CDs long. And I loaded the entire thing into iTunes, and I uploaded it to my phone, and I was like, cool, it's time to cut the grass and listen to Stuart Copeland tell me about his life. And I was
I
want to listen to that.
I would listen to that, yeah.
Yeah, it's really good.
Yeah, I think reading about other musicians' lives is always usually pretty, it's so much more informative than I ever imagined. It's like, I regret not spending enough time reading musician biographies.
That's all I listen to, because normal books are boring. One more thing. I actually skipped over this. We were laughing so hard about vomiting and activated charcoal that I missed it. When you were in Philly, before you got sick, Philadelphia is kind of like touching home base for Relapse Records. You said that you dug into the vinyl promo.
Pile.
Yeah, what'd you get? All we talk about are records and stuff.
Yeah, we're kind of vinyl dorks.
Yeah, what'd you pick up?
Let me see. Hold on. I'm like, did I forget I grabbed those? Let me
open up another box.
let's see. Yeah, I got. Where are they? Here they are. And some of this is, like, not new. Got a ASG. Win Us Over from ASG. I got.
I don't know who ASG is.
What? Well, you're going to have their Relapse. I think they were also Volcom for a minute.
Okay.
Yob. Right, I got the Catharsis from Yob. I've got the zombie record Spirit Animal.
Zombies, you know, the
minus
zombie two eyes, right?
Yeah. Just this is the one eye zombie. The drummer, what's his name? He played in Maserati for a minute.
Got it.
If fuck, I can't think of his name. New Royal Thunder.
Oh, right on.
Yeah, I'm actually friends with. They used to be in a band back in the day called World Against World. They were like a kind of like a black metal punk hybrid type of band, and I know her as Melanie. I always call her Melanie, but Melanie and Josh. They were a husband and wife team.
Yes.
So before they were on Relapse, they sent me their EP. I have a demo.
There was the old version of Royal Thunder, Riddle of Steel, my old band. We played with them at the Star Bar in Atlanta because they're
an Atlanta band.
Yeah.
Aren't they? I don't know if they are now, but they were.
Yeah, they've since changed members, I've heard, but I haven't seen them. I'm stoked. I haven't been able to listen to any of these because my needle was broken. But and then another zombie record, Escape Velocity, the new Nothing record,
right on,
and this big Death Box, Spiritual
what?
Healing.
What?
That's gnarly. Oh, yeah, it's huge. The packaging is huge. It's like, you know, it's like a big cardboard thing with I guess it's.
They just gave that to you?
Two LPs, but yeah, it's so killer. I'm like, dude.
Oh my gosh!
Yeah.
So you're a Death fan?
I gotta work like a week to buy that.
I will be.
You will be. I will be.
I'm definitely a tourist up to this point. That's why I wanted to get that. I'm like, oh, dude, what's up with this? Like, take it, man. It's yours.
Oh my god, that's great.
Looks sweet.
Yes, absolutely.
That's a rad. Yeah, that's cool.
I think I think we can let you go. I think we've done enough damage.
Yeah. I've done enough damage to myself.
Are you a Built to Spill fan?
You know, I think I probably should be. I don't think I've had the right introduction to Built to Spill.
You should be. Yes, you should.
Okay. Right on. Yeah.
I'm sure
I was
like
just going to say, I picked up their latest on vinyl that just came out.
Yeah?
So.
And it's good?
That's my vinyl purchase. Yeah, excellent. They're a great band. Definitely check them out.
Rad, I will.
I just ordered, I just pre-ordered the new Colosseum album last night. Finally got off my
phone. Hell yeah.
I love Colosseum, man. I'm so stoked for Anxiety's Kiss. Super excited to get that. You know that guy? You're a guitarist. Maybe you can nerd out on this. Did you know his name's Ryan something from Colosseum? You know he made his own pedal. He had a company like make their own pedals. It was called Anxiety Echo or something like that. And he sold like the vinyl T-shirt, guitar pedal, sticker, back patch, whatever. Like they did the whole like a package of it. And he made like 36 of them. Sold out like immediately.
You know, that's like sort of, that's like my exit plan. Like if I ever have to pull the ripcord, because I build, you know, I geek out on guitar stuff too. I'm sure we've talked about this, but there's a bunch of pedals I've made that like clone pedals, nothing proprietary or nothing too tweaked. Like an MXR microamp clone, a green ringer, like ring modulator. I just built was the gnarliest one so far. It's a Mutron octave divider clone from BYOC. It's fucking gnarly. It took me like 7 hours to build. I'm like, dude. And that one is like a low octave plus a high octave ring modulator. And then you can do, there's a blend knob and a tone knob and like a stabilizer switch. And if you go to YouTube, you can see demo videos of those, like the original Mutron octave divider and then like the clones. Mm-hmm. To me, the clones sound easily as good, if not slightly better, a little bit more sturdy, and they don't have to have the giant power cable. It's in a smaller housing. The head I use in Torch, obviously that Elsner one I built. And so at some point, I'm like, man, there's a website that I really like for really basic and very solid electronics information called Beavis Audio, like Beavis and Butthead. But it's BEAVIS audio.com. And they geek out on just the most fundamental levels. It's like, here is what a resistor is. Here is what it does. Yeah. Here is its symbol. Here are the different kinds of resistors. Here are pictures of them. Here's what the color codes mean. Like, here's why you would put them in this and not here. You know, like, here's how you can design a circuit. Get a breadboard, start plugging shit in this way. You know, try this circuit, try this. Here's how you would write it as a schematic. Here's how you would do it. So, like, I'll spend a lot of time there. Like, and eventually it's like, I would love to have some kind of overdrive or fuzz that the stuff I've made, I'm using on every Torch record, you know, apart from, like, Digitech stuff we use. I've got a Varela Skyhammer pedal I use. Like, yeah, the dream is like, oh, I'm going to make some kind of Elsner fucking fuzz that I use in Torch all the time, and then totally cash the fucking, like, here's what I use, you know, and just build them, and, you know, just get, order all the parts, make, like, 100 a year or so, 200 a year, and just...
Wow, that would be rad.
You mentioned in the tour diary. You mentioned in the tour diary that you repaired something for the guy from nothing while you were.
Yeah,
on the road.
He had a full tone OCD.
That's it.
Overdrive.
And,
yeah.
And you said it was
the
like
switch went bad.
You said working on electronics is kind of like meditation and playing Tetris at the same time, and you totally like one with it and everything. That's cool. If you've got a head for that.
I love it. Yeah.
Kind of wired. No pun intended. Kind of wired to do that kind of stuff. That would be cool to like meticulously.
I see what you did there.
You see what I did? Pretty clever, right?
Yeah.
Because wires, awesome. Because electronics have wires in it, and people
wires
say,
in it. Oh,
right. Yeah.
Took me a second.
Right.
Yeah, no, yeah,
hot for pizza. Get it?
Dude. Yeah. He had a switch. He had a switch go bad in his full tone, and so I was like, oh, please let me look at it, please. He's like, sure, dude. And so took it apart. Like, yeah, the switch fell apart in my hands. When I took it out, I have another pedal that isn't working that has the same switch. I'll just gut it and stick it in here.
There you go.
And, you know, 20 years, we're in Canada. You soldered a new one in there. And he was like, dude, thank you.
That's so cool.
You're a hero.
I like being, you know, it's like the satisfaction of being able to help, and I get to do something.
Yeah, yeah.
Ooh. Get my head out. And I'm like, please. Let my head go to this place.
Yeah, you guys clearly know your gear because every time I've seen you, I'm amazed at how great you sound live. Like I don't understand it. I go to shows all the time and it's always bad sound. But if it's like I always can rely on, like I'm gonna go see Torch tonight and I'm gonna hear their amps and everything's gonna sound great.
God,
it's just
fantastic.
I don't know what you're doing,
you know,
but it's just.
I think you know.
Go ahead.
I, with a lot of it, dude. Like now I'm on a tear, but like I think a lot of it is like tones. I think people will. I'm not saying you or anybody I know, even, but like my complaint with a lot of bands, it'll be. If I had to guess, I think they're trying to approximate sounds that they hear on a record. It's like, well, that's probably, you know, what you're hearing. You're trying to get your amp to make that sound, and really, what they did is they made the guitar tones. Sort of sit in with the rest of the mix on this record. So what you're hearing on the record might not be exactly what it sounded like if you were standing there in a room. You know, like, it'll either be way too much gain or, you know, scooped mids or whatever, and everybody's afraid. Like, everybody wants, like, the usual complaint I have is shit'll be buried in too much gain or too much noise in their signal path not enough actual tone. It's like too much tone shaping, you know, like, dude, just let the amp do all of the heavy lifting, and then if you need an overdrive, do that, you know, get a tube amp, get something solid,
right,
you know, get something that's 100 watts, that's plenty of headroom, you know, like that's my at least my angle on it, you know, I mean, mileage may vary, people can do what they want, but I think a lot of times it's just sort of people sort of trying to get their gear to do stuff it wasn't really designed to do, and so you're not getting you're not getting the best, and then not in a cool way. You know, you're not getting the best performance out of it. You know, like, man, like, you know, this fucking Fender Twin. The reason it's popular is because when you run the thing flat out, it sounds insane. Like, that's what you do. You know, like, that's how you play this fucking amp. You know, like, you don't put it on two with a string of, you know, fancy distortion pedals in front of it.
Right.
Like, it's not going to sound cool. Like, anyway, yeah, that's my take on it.
Yeah, you ever heard of the band Bark Market?
Oh, yeah, they were from, were they a St. Louis band?
I'm not sure where they're from. But I mean, if you ever heard their stuff, it's like, it just sounds so huge. And they actually, when you said the Fender Twin, that just reminded me, the guitarist actually used two Fender Twins live to get that sound.
Oh, yeah, which insane.
So you wouldn't think that's the approach. Exactly. You wouldn't think that's the approach to get that kind of a guitar sound. When you listen to those records, you're thinking, man, the guy's playing out of like a full stack with, you know,
right,
whatever big tube head, whatever you can name. But he just had the Fender Twins.
Yeah, 50 or 100 watt twin is just unholy. Like,
yeah, they're huge, but even
yeah.
there's don't look that intimidating, but they sound amazing.
Yeah, yeah. And it's my buddy Andrew Wiggins from Hawks and Women's Prison, and what he's playing in so many bands right now.
Women's Prison?
Oh yeah, it's WYMZPRYZN. It's like a punk band. But he's a killer dude. He works in town here at Acorn Amplifiers. They do very minimal custom, like, proprietary builds, but they're like the spot in Atlanta for awesome repairs. And
cool.
Yeah, we were talking about Fenders. He's like, oh, because he's a sound guy, and I can't remember what band it was, but he was like, oh, it was just so nice to see somebody had a Fender Twin and they knew how to use it correctly, you know, quote-unquote correctly, where it's like, dude, make this motherfucker sing. That's what this was designed to do.
Yeah.
Like, it's not living up to its true potential. Like, turn this motherfucker up.
Right on.
Cool. Definitely good. I'm going to put the BeavisAudio.com link in the show notes, too, just because.
Cool. They're going to be like, who's this fucking dork?
I think there's some guitar. We got some guitar nerds listening, I think.
Yeah, yeah. No, it's super informative for anybody who wants to get into building pedals.
That's cool. Really cool.
Is there anything you want to plug or
say, man.
I guess, you know, we have a huge European tour coming up, May 1st through June 2nd, and then we come home for June. We go out with a huge West Coast, Upper Midwest tour in July with Melt Banana, which is like July.
Oh wow. Yeah, I remember. I saw that announcement.
July
That's so
2nd
rad.
Through like August 2nd. Yeah, it's going to be a huge tour.
Even though that band was still
around. We haven't been out west in a minute. Oh, yeah, it's going to be insane.
Cool, man.
Hey, any East Coast dates coming up?
Nothing in the program. Like, we're going to do, so the next three tours are booked. Yeah, so we have this one coming up overseas. We'll be out all of July with Melt Banana, and then the next tour will be another European tour in November, but after a festival in the middle of August, we fly out to Oslo for Oya Festival, O-Y-A, and we're playing there August 15th, but other than that, we have nothing between then and the November overseas tour. So if we were going to head east, it would probably be sometime in the fall.
Bring it on.
Cool.
Yeah.
Well, hopefully you'll have lots of good health through all this traveling, and when you come around in the fall, we'll get to shake your hand and introduce ourselves.
Awesome.
And
yeah. For sure, man. I won't be risking your lives by shaking your hands.
We'll bring some of that activated charcoal just in case.
Yeah, rubber gloves. Yeah, yeah.
We're gonna lock you in one of those glass tubes like that lady in your video.
Exactly.
So you can't breathe on us.
Yeah.
Yeah. They make
Bubble
you
boy.
Wear that bathing suit if you get in there. Yeah, I have to wear that suit.
Oh, all right, man. Beautiful.
That's the rub.
That's great.
Man, whole new level. Podcast just got like 10% sexier. I like that. That's good.
Radical. Awesome.
Andrew, when we're going to cut you loose, we'll definitely hook up with you whenever after the November thing or something like that. Let's circle around and talk again.
Yeah.
You can tell us crazy overseas stories about how they gave you too many gummy candies and stuff. Yeah, man.
They do. Yeah, they normally do. Yeah, I'm sure I'll have plenty.
Right on. Cool.
Dude, it's so cool that you've taken the time. Really, really appreciate it, man.
Yeah.
Not a thing, man. Thank you. I'm sorry for showing up late.
No, not at all.
Best of luck to you guys.
Yeah.
Likewise, guys.
Be safe. Be healthy. See you later, man.
Take care.
All right. See you. See you guys.
It was awesome talking to Andrew. I just want to mention one more thing before we get going here. Gentleman by the name of Jonathan Dick. He is a writer. He's written for NPR, Spin, Pitchfork, Vice. He does Steel for Brains. Google any of that. His daughter has been having some medical difficulties. And there is a GoFundMe campaign for him that I feel pretty strongly about. I just wanted to throw it out there. That I'm going to be putting it in links. You guys can check out what it's all about and everything. But as of right now, it's been open for a few days. and they're aiming for $20,000, and this guy is just about to hit the $10,000 mark already. It's been really inspiring to see how many people have kind of pulled together.
That's awesome.
And, you know, they decided not to buy a couple lattes, and they gave money to this guy. I mean, I don't know the dude. I know him through I know of him through Seth Werkheiser, the Skull Toaster guy. He opened my eyes to it. I saw it on Twitter, and I'll favorite it and look at it later. But Seth is actually the one that was like, dude, did you see what's going on with John's daughter and everything? She has a breathing disorder of I don't even want to try to pronounce it because I'm not going to do it right. But basically, she needs respiratory assistance or therapy like on a daily basis for the rest of her life. Little girl's got some problems. Wow. And I just want to put that link, you know, not a guilt thing. Just I put the link for the GoFundMe in show notes. Go check it out. Read about it. Understand what it's about a little bit. If your heart leads you to give a little bit to this dude, it's not a scam. Guy, he seems to be a really great guy, and he needs some help financially. So that's what this is all about, you know. So that's all. I'm gonna add that to the. The links, and I want everybody to go check it out and just spend 30 seconds reading about it.
That's terrible, but that's awesome that they're doing that. So definitely.
Yeah. And this cool, has been shared. I mean, today is the 25th, and this has been up for a couple days, and this has already been shared like over 1,300 times. And people are, this is getting pushed around, and people are really helping this guy, and it warms my heart, man. So, try to help.
Awesome.
That's it. That's all I got. I just wanted to mention John.
That's all I got.
All right, then.
That's all you're getting.
That's all you're getting. Our episodes are going a little bit long. Sorry. We're sorry to give you all this free, awesome stuff for free.
I'm not sorry at all.
I'm not sorry at all either. I'm being sarcastic. Can't you pick up when I'm being sarcastic?
I thought you were legitimately apologizing.
No, I never legitimately apologized to anyone about
anything. I know.
And for that, I'm truly sorry.
He's never wrong, and he never apologizes. No. You know, we're just trying to keep things casual, you know. Trav and I will get on the phone, and I'll sort of go, look, I'm kind of worried about this aspect of the show, or he may say, I was thinking about this aspect of the show. And we're always saying to each other, who cares? Let's just have fun with it.
Yeah,
and I think it's generally our we're not trying to compete with any other podcasts that are blowing up or whatever.
We don't care about any of you listeners at all. We don't care about any of you that are listening at all right now. At all. No? Is that not
we're definitely ridiculous. We are moving away from the interview format. We're trying our best to not be question answer. So some of our guests aren't going to be as it's going to go that route more, and some are going to be less. It just depends on the vibe of the chat. And that's what you can come to expect as we move forward. We're still trying to work out the format and the bugs and all that, but audio quality, but you know, at the end of the day, if podcasts start to become a lot of homework and a lot of excess work that you're adding to your already busy schedule, then they're not going to last, and we're going to stop doing it. So if we can have fun and we can do it on a casual level, we're going to keep plugging away.
That's right.
And that's it.
So that's it. So
I've got nothing else.
Try to help it. Now you're done. Are you done now? Cause you keep saying
now
you're done.
Now I'm done.
All right. So now somebody, you're done now. Now,
you know, did you know that there, no, I'm done.
So go follow the link to John's, help out Jay Dick's sick little girl. That'll be the link on GoFundMe. The link is in show notes. Listen to Torch. Excuse listen me? To Built to Spill.
You don't have to cuss at me.
Huh? What'd I say? Sick little
girl. Oh, GoFundMe. Oh, my gosh.
Oh, God. What did you hear? Now, I know what you heard. And now,
forget it. I'm trying really terribly to put some humor at the end of here. I'm sorry.
Can I try the outro again without you interrupting me with your filthy talk?
Go ahead.
Go help John. Listen to Torch. Yes. Listen to Built to Spill. Listen to Coliseum. And go cut your grass. The weather's beautiful.
Absolutely.
Good night, everybody.
Good night.
Good night.
Below my land. Oh, my land. Down to Goblin Town. Down to Goblin Town. Down to Goblin Town. You go, my land.
We love you. Take care. Bye-bye.